Support for the Source Podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Charm is the ability to attract or delight. As if by magic, a charming person is able to cast a spell of persuasion, seduction, manipulation. Charm is a good thing to have if you're a world leader. It can be like a superpower, but will you use that superpower for good or for evil? And then why would we allow global politics to be shaped by something so inherently unstable and by definition so personal? Sociologist Julia Sonnevin takes a look in her new book, Charm, How Magical Personalities Shape Global Politics. And Julia, welcome to The Source.
Thanks so much, David. Thank you for having me.
So why look into charm? You know, if we're trying to figure out what makes the world go around, is it charm?
That's a great question. So what we are seeing, researchers of politics, that in the last 30 years, we have paid more and more attention to personalities, less attention to institutions, values, policies, or even facts. And if that's the reality of politics nationally and internationally too, then I think we have to understand better how charm and charisma work on the global stage.
But it does seem like if we're looking to charm as something to solve international issues, avoid war, maybe start wars, that kind of leans into authoritarian, isn't it? You need a strong man, leader, and I mean strong man in a negative way, and he has this charm. He's able to manipulate situations and people around him, either through personality, being able to just riz people up, or even threaten them in order to get what they want.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you are very right about that, David. Charm has two sides. It has a positive kind of seductive side. We all know that. We all know charming people in everyday life. You know, we could list, ex-boyfriends or whoever we want to in that category. And then there is also a darker side to charm, which I call deception. And it oscillates on this spectrum, seduction, deception. And depending on your political views, so that's one thing, you will filter facts and what you see through your political identity, you will judge. And what we see with charm internationally is that sometimes it can be weaponized for the good, for public interest. It can energize people when we are tired of politics, we don't want to hear about it anymore. But at the same time, it creates, a very unstable political sphere, because we will have these charming, seductive, magnetic personalities rise on the global stage, so really think theater, and then they fall. And we will see this kind of process of rise, fall. And how do you have a reliable, trustable politics? And that is the big question of the 21st century. You can use charm for diplomacy, you can bring down walls with it, but you can also create wars or destroy existing values.
Right, so you mentioned ex-boyfriend. And so the story he's having, he was so charming, and I was swept off my feet. And little did I know that he was going to steal my identity and run up my credit cards. So if you had some warning, if you were able to be inoculated against the charm of this person and do a background check on them and find out they've done this to other people before, maybe you could save yourself a lot of misery. So if you have someone like Maduro of Venezuela, seems very charming and charismatic while he's, on television, and he's a big, strong-looking fellow, and but yet he's a brutal dictator. What can we do to inoculate populations against these charming personalities who are actually trying to destroy democracies in order for their own self-enrichment?
I mean, that's the $1 million question, obviously. The situation is that lives, our social lives, are not rational. We all hope that we, you know, objectively weigh facts and make very rational, balanced decisions, but that's simply not the case. And we are social scientists, political scientists. We are very frustrated by this fact that we can't measure everything. Not everything is rational. You cannot define or put a straight jacket on everything in social life. And that's the case with charm, too. So it's very hard to define it. It will have different effects on people in different situations. And it's very hard to say, oh, these are the three things you have to do to avoid charm. There's a whole charisma charm industry that is built on the idea that you can teach this quality. You know, over a weekend, you can become a charming CEO. It's more complicated than that. And the defense is more complicated as well. So if you see it in a politician, first of all, if your political views align with that person, you are more likely to see it as some kind of positive, charming quality. But if you disagree with the politics of the person, the deceptive features will become stronger. But there are clear cases, as you mentioned, when we are dealing with dictators, authoritarian leadership. And the problem is that because it's seductive, because it's magical, it is able to convince a lot of people, even in cases when all the rational facts are against that. So we know many cases internationally where there is a political leader who runs terrible healthcare, opposed schools, and so on, and still wins. And there is something to the personal magnetism, charisma of that political leader. What we can do is try to, as much as possible, look at it in kind of an analytical way and try to analyze it. What is this person actually doing? What are the metaphors that she or he is using? What are the vision, ideas, imaginaries that she's communicating to us? And as we analyze, we may be able to deconstruct a bit the charm. But charm is powerful. And what my book is arguing is that we shouldn't look at it only as a negative feature of public life. It also has a way to energize.
Right, to enable to keep a base of support and so that you will be able to represent whatever it is. You talk about in your book Angela Merkel from Germany, no longer the mm-hmm. leader there, but, you know, so long she was and very successful. I never thought of her as a charming person with this dynamo personality. She always seemed to me being a very competent technocrat. So was she a charm monster?
Well, so I included her because she's a great counter case. So here is somebody who was the Chancellor of Germany for 16 years, incredibly successful. She had 80% approval rate at the time of ending her term. Unbelievable. You know, we don't see that often in politics these days. And I looked at her Instagram because I was able to, you know, I was interested in how she's building up her personality. And what I saw there, that she did exactly the opposite. She did not become an Instagram influencer in any sort of way. She did not show her family. Her husband gave only one interview during the 16 years of her reign. It really wasn't the central element of her politics. She presented a very rational, fact-based understanding of politics. So I was wondering, wow, here is the case. Here's a politician who is not using any of the charming techniques that I'm describing, who is against basically the most important arguments of my book. But I do think it is a slightly unique case. You are dealing with Germany, who had a very negative experience with charisma through Hitler. And we know from polls that German voting publics are very skeptical of any kind of charismatic, charming performance. So there might be a special history in that case. Still, looking at her Instagram, you don't see any innovative visuals or any kind of introduction of personal life. You see a politician explaining to you science and facts and complex world events in really detailed and complicated ways. So there is a counter case, and I think that's important to show that not everything is about charm and charisma in global politics. There are counter cases, and we will see both. Maybe it will be cyclical, like in life, that you have a charming character and then you have a more bureaucratic character, and you see this kind of balance playing out.
Yeah, I'm thinking about Höcke from the Germany Alternative for Deutschland party, who is a mm-hmm. right-wing fascist-like leader in Germany, and he's very charming.
Yeah, so that we also see that German politics is changing as well. And everywhere, politicians have to adjust to the new media environment. And that we haven't discussed yet, perhaps because here we use voice and it's radio. But we live in a political environment and we are bombarded by visuals, videos, reels, and so on of politicians. And in that situation, that charm, that personal magnetism becomes ever more important. So we keep testing our politicians. Is he authentic? So he's in this completely fake media environment or in a very intense campaign. And he has to appear as one of us, you know, just like us. He could be our next door neighbor. It's an absurd requirement because you don't need to be like a next door neighbor to be a successful politician. Yet this is what we expect from our leaders. And we just run these tests one after the other and see how they do. And in this media environment that we live in, they have to use some of these techniques. So even in German politics, with that very strong history, we see some counter trends as well.
Right. So we happen to be going through a process in the United States right now where we're picking a new set of leaders. And some of them are trying to come across as charming and as someone that would you'd want to be your neighbor, live next door to. And we're going to talk about that when we come back from the break, because I know you have written about that. You've written about the word weird being used in our political environment right now and with Kamala Harris and also Tim Walz. So we're going to take a break. We'll come back. We'll pick up the thread on the conversation. And also, if you got a question or a comment about charm in politics and on the global stage, do you feel comfortable knowing that what's happening on the international front is going to be decided on whether or not people like each other? The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The source continues right after this.
Support for TPR comes from Jingu House in the Japanese Tea Garden, featuring Asian cuisine with a San Antonio twist. Open for lunch 7 days a week. View the menu at jinguhousesatx.com.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. With me on the line, Julia Sonovan. She is the author. She's a cultural sociologist. Her new book is Charm, How Magnetic Personalities Shape Global Politics. And you can call in with your questions and comments, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Where does charm end and manipulation begin?
That's what we, you know, assess in each and every case. You know, when you look at a social media reel or when you see somebody on TV, whichever media platform you use, or when you listen to this, you know, radio show, you know, people will assess, oh, is David charming? You know, how is his voice? How is his reaction to people and so on? So this is the continuous authenticity test that we have in everyday life, but also in politics. But because most politicians we meet on, you know, through the media, few exceptions, obviously, rallies and shaking hands and so on. But most of the time we meet them through media, it will be an assessment of their media representation. How do they perform? Do they appear as, you know, being one of us, being at home in the situation, or do they appear as out of place, somehow weird, strange, outsiders? That's what we assess in each case. And it's also important to realize that we quickly move the categories. So there might be a charming performance. You like the politician. And in the next case, you know, you feel like this is too much. He uses the word too often. This is starting to become cringe, as my students would say. And that is the situation we see.
Right. Maybe one of the least charming American political figures, maybe Richard Nixon. It was 50 years mm-hmm. ago today when he announced that he was resigning after the Watergate scandal. Had he been more charming, maybe he might have survived, or maybe he wouldn't have had to stoop to such tactics in order to sabotage his opponents. But certainly he was a person that came across as weird and awkward and cringe. But, you know, most American presidents have been very charming. You know, Bill Clinton, Kennedy, Obama certainly, and you can even say that Trump has some charm to him. He certainly is a salesman, and he's able to, sell himself as a product to many people. Do you see charm like happening with Donald Trump?
Yes, I think that's very important to realize that no political side owns charm. It's not the case that it's something you have on the left or on the right. No, this is something we see both nationally and internationally, even in conservative or right-wing politics. One of the chapters of my book is about Viktor Orban, the Prime Minister of Hungary, who won 4 consecutive elections. He was called throughout an autocrat, a dictator, a mini Mussolini, and none of those words really worked. And I argue in the book that one also needs to understand his personal magnetism, his charisma and charm in the local context to understand why he's surviving one election after the next. And in the case of Trump, I would think that if you are a supporter, then you certainly see the power of personality. And what we also see in politics, that if you like the personality of the person, if you're captured by his charm, then you will forgive more. We all work this way, that, oh, okay, this or that was not acceptable, but ultimately I feel attached or I feel connected.
You give a pass.
To the whole universe, right?
Yeah. So right now, you've written about this in Newsweek, in a column, saying that the word weird is now having political potency. It's become, has a lot of currency. And so is that the opposite of charm?
So weird is an interesting case. As I mentioned with Orban, we have seen internationally, election after election, that certain vocabularies don't really work. So in multiple countries, the left has been trying to use the word dictator or the enemy of democracy, and it's just very difficult to communicate because these are abstract terms for most voters. So weird is an interesting invention, political communication wise, I think. On the one hand, it has a certain kind of bullying playground character, which I'm no fan of. But on the other hand, it introduced kind of a new framework of thinking. And it also introduced the idea that the Democrats are not afraid. So if it's an enemy of democracy or if it's a dictator, there is an element of fear. But if you call somebody weird, you don't take that person that seriously. So that's the interesting component with that word. Is it the opposite of charm? That's a more complicated question. I mean, you could also say awkward or bureaucratic or technocratic as the opposite of charm, or just having anti-charisma or no charm. But these are really vocabularies we also use in everyday life. Is that person charming, or is that person really just like you can't relate to him, he's so awkward and so on. And as you mentioned, there are some politicians who are regularly called charming. So I read through a ton of political biographies, and you cannot read a single book about Bill Clinton that does not mention this personal charm, being like a vacuum cleaner, drawing people in, working the room, and so on. So there's a whole vocabulary for this. To the Nixon case, as last point, I think there are powerful political events where charm may not be enough to save you. It could certainly help, but I'm not entirely sure that if Nixon had been super charming, he would have survived the scandal.
I have an email from Ricardo. I have a question for Julia. How does charm change over time? Is it mostly something that manifests in a particular context and time, eventually fading, or does it have staying power simply based on the allure of a personality?
That's an excellent question. Thank you. It can fade and it can change over time. No question about that. We see ups and downs very often with politicians being described as charming, and then a scandal comes, or a major attack comes, or people start to describe the person as a fraud.
And I have seen politicians who seem to overestimate their charm. They have this idea that they are so charming that if they're able to get into a room with their opponent, with their international opponent, they're able to charm the pants off them and able to deal with the crisis on a one-on-one basis. And to me, that seems like undeserved self-confidence at times. And so, Julia, are you there? Okay, so we're going to try and figure out what's going on there. But, you know, trying to decide these major issues on the political stage based upon charm and charisma between world leaders seems like something that is not in the best interest of all the players involved. You know, we're seeing that, you know, if certain world leaders are able to develop a certain relationship, able to make them make a connection, have a rapport on a one-on-one basis, but yet, you know, are they going to sacrifice what's in the best interest of their of the people that they're representing and the nation that they're representing in? And I'm wondering if that's what we're seeing with Donald Trump and Putin, the dictator of Russia. Do you see a lot of efforts for, you know, these politicians trying to charm each other? And this is such a basis for their political power, you know, trying to use charm. Of course, charm can be built from a distance, from an audience. And we're seeing that now in these campaigns. You know, we don't actually get to spend time one-on-one with these candidates, whether it be Kamala Harris or Donald Trump. We're dependent upon how well they communicate their charm over electronic media. And this is, you know, not an opportunity to see them close up in a very controlled environment. Their charm is something that is dependent upon handlers. The chemistry that we see presented there is not organic, but actually designed and well-crafted, frequently through camera angles and carefully scripted events and photo ops. You know, we see this at rallies. We're seeing this now, possibly with the presentation of the National Democratic Party, Tim Walz, as the vice president. As he's being presented to the nation, the vast majority of people have no idea who Tim Walz is, but yet they're seeing him for the first time being presented in these rallies, and he's coming across as a reliable and funny guy, someone who seems like he would be able to take on the responsibilities of a national office, but at the same time keep his roots, and it seems like that is his charm. And so as we look towards the election, are we really weighing policies that are going to be in the best interest of the nation? Are we looking at, like, what's going to create a sustainable national economy that's going to work for the benefit of everyone? Or are we just picking the person that we want to have a beer with? And of course, that was something that was shared time and time again when we talked about the election of George W. Bush, that he was, you know, the pilot. A polling showed that he was someone that people wanted to have a beer with rather than Al Gore. And we saw, you know, good or bad, how that turned out for us. So, you know, a charm can be a good thing, it can be a bad thing, but the best thing to do is we should be aware that it's there and that we should be on the lookout so that we don't get manipulated, but we can enjoy the charming individual. And so let's go to wrap this up. Julia Sonneved is the Associate Professor of Sociology and Communications at the New School for Social Research and the author of the book Charm, How Magnetic Personalities Shape Global Politics. And that's The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted and produced by David Martin Davies. Kayla Padilla is our booking and engagement producer. Engineering support from Ruben Garcia, Jesse Reeves, and Steve Short. Dan Katz is TPR's Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.